Next case for this morning is United States v. Holt.
Good morning, Your Honors. Stanley Hill on behalf of Jakeef Holt. Also seated at counsel table is Mario Lucas. May it please the court. The jury was entitled, because of the officer's prior misconduct, to consider the specific conduct or the specific prior conduct which might have helped the jury to make a determination regarding their moral fiber and makeup. The rule allows the trier of fact to pull back the curtain on the officer's course of conduct over the years and consider whether the conduct this day was consistent or not with that conduct. Thus, the scope of cross-examination was too limited and narrow, especially given the defendant's defense was that Connolly and Cochran were doing what history shows they had done before within the last 3 years. Thus, the judge had the discretion, which he abused, to permit the jury to consider whether the officers had bias, prejudice, predisposition, or course of conduct, maybe because of the 30-day suspension, and were so upset because of that suspension as to take it out on any arrestee, and specifically Jakeef Holt. It was proper and right, and the jury should have been allowed to consider these facts, as well as their employers, the CPD, the Chicago Police Department's conclusion and opinion confirming these facts. Reputation evidence and opinion sought to be introduced was from a very relevant community, which the jury should have been allowed to consider. Moreover, the government had a duty to disclose. Fundamental fairness requires the jury to be fully and truthfully informed of all matters within the knowledge of the prosecution or its agents. Napoo versus Illinois. A prosecutor is not simply another advocate. Rather, he is the attorney of the people and as such has an independent duty to seek justice, even when it may hurt his case. ABA Code of Professional Responsibility, EC 7-13, 1980. Nash recanted statements regarding Holt, and the government knew this. Also, the government knew that the officers had engaged in this type of conduct where they alleged within the last 3 years. And if the government chose to use them as witnesses, they had that option. If they chose to use them as witnesses, the government had an obligation to expose the flaws in the character of their witnesses to the trier of fact.
Is there any support for that proposition?
I think it's the rule, and I think it's the case law as I read it, Your Honor.
What rule and what case law imposes an affirmative obligation on the government to impeach its own witnesses?
Well, I don't know. You don't impeach your own witnesses.
Well, that's what you just said.
What I was trying to say was that under the prosecutor's ethical responsibility, the prosecutor is the attorney for the people. If there's any information, I respectfully submit that would help the trier of fact to consider whether on this particular day, with respect to this particular defendant, that these officers were acting in conformity with conduct that they had done within the last 3 years.
Is there any legal support for that?
I think that the case law, Napoo versus Illinois, that's the closest.
That case has to do with an attorney's, a prosecutor's responsibility to correct a lie by a witness while the witness is on the witness.
I think that's not
what we've got here. You're saying the prosecutor had an affirmative obligation to call witnesses and present extrinsic evidence.
I think that a lie can be called a failure to communicate all relevant information that you have. I think that if they had the choice as to whether or not they wanted
Counsel,
to put...
that would fundamentally change the nature of the adversarial system.
Your Honor, I respectfully submit that it's...
If the defendant wanted to put this witness, Ms. Nash, in front of the jury, he had every opportunity to do so.
Judge, I was not the trial judge.
I understand that, but
I mean,
she
the trial
was,
lawyer
right,
in that case.
Just,
this case was given to me because of some problems that the trial lawyer had in adequately representing his client. Now, the government was aware of those shortcomings. They were aware of the human as well as professional shortcomings of that particular lawyer.
Right, and all
I'm
that...
I'm sorry.
Well, that doesn't impose any obligation or duty on the part of the government to make up for defense counsel's shortcomings.
I think, Your Honor, that ABA Code of Professional Responsibility, EC 7-13, back to 1980, can be viewed as attempting, based on the professional canons, to explain what the prosecutor's duty is. The prosecutor is not simply another advocate. That comes right from NAPU.
He
is the attorney for the people, and he has an independent duty to seek justice. And I respectfully submit that that includes, if you know that these cops have put a gun or a cop has put a gun on an individual within the last 3 years, and that the police department has concluded that that happened and suspended that officer. If the prosecutor then chooses to say, I'm going to make my case using this officer that I know within the last 3 years has done what Jakeef Holt was claiming happened to him on that day, that they put a gun on him and charged him with something that he didn't do, that whether or not that hurts the prosecutor as an advocate. And I have tremendous respect for Barry Eldon. When I started off as a young assistant state's attorney in the Cook County State's Attorney's Office, he was my supervisor. I worked under him, and I respect him immensely. He tried this case, and all due respect to Mr. Eldon, knowing what he did, knowing what he knew about his witnesses, if he chose to present these witnesses, even if it hurt his case, the jury is wise enough to determine whether or not what this officer did on that day was in conformity with his conduct. That's what the adversarial system is all about. Triers of fact are not just persons without common sense. They know that maybe it happened this way, maybe it didn't, because there was a statement that Colt allegedly said, I should have shot your pee, whatever, that he allegedly made that to two of the officers, so maybe he did have it. But by the same, have the gun, because that's an alleged admission that they claim he made at the police station. I didn't try the case, I might submit. But still, that was information that the trier of fact should have had before it to consider, along with the fact that within the last 3 years, these officers had put a gun on a man, and the police department had determined that that was indeed maybe the case.
Yeah, but that doesn't make every arrest thereafter.
Oh.
Of a felon in possession that you can't put him on.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I would admit that. But it's not up to the judge to bar that evidence, I would respectfully submit. Within the last 3 years, it's certainly not stale. It's certainly something that maybe he's changed. Maybe he found religion. Obviously, he's still working for the police department. If it was so egregious, or if they thought that he hadn't changed his ways, I would respectfully submit that they would have snatched it. The fact that he's still working, I would assume, means that they find that that was just an indiscretion that particular time. And that's something that Mr. Eldon could have argued.
Did defense counsel appropriately tee up this issue?
I think he tried with what he had to work with, Your Honor. I think he did the best he could with what he had to work with. But I don't think that Jakeef Holt should be victimized because of what his attorney... Well, I don't want to say it that way. Let me change this.
Well, you've got another...
What I'm trying to say is that...
You've got another avenue to raise that.
And that's not before us, Your Honor, but I'm respectfully saying that this court can do something about it. This court can send a message. This court can say, we want you doing your job. We want you doing your job as a prosecutor for the people. But if you know that there's some trash on these witnesses, and you know that the similarity between what the defendant is claiming is his defense and what this officer has been found to have done within the last 3 years, then even though it might hurt your case, you say to the jury, hey, this happened, but obviously he may have gotten over it because he's still working. Or maybe we need to examine what the police department is doing. But I don't know. But I trust the jury system, having done this this many years, I trust that they are wise enough, and in their infinite wisdom, they can sort it out. And I don't think that the judge should have kept them from hearing that, respectfully. With respect to sentencing, if you're going to do an upward departure or a downward departure, you got to make it clear on the record so that we can determine whether or not it was appropriate or not. I respectfully submit that Judge Moran did not do that, which is why... or did not do it adequately, respectfully, and thus it should be sent back for resentencing on that particular point. I thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Mr. Eldon?
May it please the court, Barry Eldon on behalf of the United States. I agree that the prosecutor is there to do justice, and that's what was done in this case. There was another person in the room there also to do justice, and that was the district court judge. And the system worked in this case because the prosecutor put before the district court judge the information at issue and allowed the district court judge to rule in accordance with the federal rules of evidence. And under the federal rules of evidence, the district court judge made the right distinction between the conduct of the witness and the conduct of a third party, namely the police department. What Rule 608B says is that an examiner can inquire about the specific instances of the conduct of a witness when it reflects on the witness's character for truthfulness. And there was no restriction on that. The defense counsel could ask, did you arrest somebody on such and such a day? What did you do? What didn't you do? All aspects of Officer Conley's conduct, the specific instances of the witness's conduct, was subject to inquiry.
And defense counsel, was never the subject of cross-examination, as I understand the record. The defense attorney never tried to put in what was permissible.
He didn't try very hard. There were a couple of questions about, did you make an improper arrest? Objection was, he didn't get into it. In the second trial, there were two trials. In the second trial...
All we have here is the second trial, right?
That's correct. And in the second trial, the closest he came really was at sidebar. He asked the judge, may I ask him whether he received any disciplinary action relative to his employment.
Well, that's what was impermissible under the rules, but he never pursued a permissible line of questioning.
He did not, Judge. He did not pursue a permissible line of questioning. And
was not precluded from pursuing a permissible line of questioning.
Not.
He just didn't do it.
He didn't do it. We made that clear in our motion. The district judge made it very clear, and the transcript of the district judge's ruling is an appendix to the government's brief, and it's very clear that the district judge told counsel, you can ask him whether he engaged in the conduct, and made that very clear, but you cannot ask about the discipline. And that was a correct ruling. That ruling was correct based on the language of the rule, based on the advisory committee comments, based on the Davis case.
As Judge Sykes was exploring, that question wasn't asked in the second trial, though.
The closest he came was to ask at sidebar, Judge, may I ask him whether he had any disciplinary problems with his relative to his work?
As far as the examination of the witness, he didn't tee it up. He didn't ask.
He did not tee it up well. Now, there was a motion, and he did not tee it up well. In other words, he didn't pursue what the judge allowed him to pursue. The judge ruled on our motion in limine and said, you may inquire about the conduct of the witness. You have to ask him whether he engaged in the conduct. You cannot ask about the discipline. And that was a correct ruling. And so defense counsel had the opportunity to pursue the inquiry within the meaning of the rule. And the Dawson case does not change any of that, because Dawson was involved with a judicial opinion, a judicial determination. We do not have that here. We do not even have a third-party opinion here. Because all we asked the court to prevent the defendant from inquiring into were the consequences of the specific instances of bad conduct that were alleged against the officer. Now, counsel says that, well, 3 years ago, Officers Conley and Corcoran did the same thing. That's not correct. That's a misstatement of the record. The prior incident, first of all, only concerned Conley, did not concern Corcoran, and was not a case of putting a gun on somebody. But in any event, the question about similarity does not come up under Rule 608B. In fact, usually in the 608B inquiry, the matter inquired about is totally different from the case on trial. You might have a drug case, and then let's say a defendant testifies, and then you ask him, well, didn't when you filed for a mortgage 5 years ago, didn't you make a false statement? And so that is the similarity. What similarity reminds me of is Rule 404B, which, of course, precludes character evidence on the theory that you're offering it to prove that a person acted in conformity therewith. There are exceptions to 404B, but if someone wants to introduce something under 404B based on similarity, on the theory that it's similar enough and close enough in time to be relevant with the familiar formula of this court, then you've got to offer it under 404B. Counsel did not offer it under 404B in the district court.
Well, and then it's inadmissible if it's offered for propensity. And that, as I understand the defendant's argument here, it's that it goes to propensity.
That's correct. It would be inadmissible unless he came within some exception which has not yet been articulated. So, in my view, it's inadmissible under 404B as well. But I'm saying when he talks about similarity, that's the only rule I can think of that would come into play, and it would be inadmissible under that. And we had an obligation to present all of this evidence to defense counsel so the defense counsel could use it as he saw fit within the rules of evidence.
That's fulfilled our obligation. That was going to be my next question. How did this come to the attention of the defense counsel and the judge?
We gave it to the defense counsel. As part of the discovery, pursuant to Brady versus Maryland.
Brady.
Yeah. We subpoenaed the police department, got all the records, and turned it over to defense counsel. And then defense counsel made his argument.
The Brady disclosure that you made.
That is correct. We fulfilled our obligation. The matter was presented to the district court judge prior to trial. The district court judge ruled. The district court judge was the person to determine whether this came into evidence. On our motion in limine. So the system worked as it should work. And I wanted to say something about sentencing. Because there was an issue raised in the reply brief. It was raised for the first time in the reply brief. We didn't, and that's this question about Chapter 4 convictions and basically what counsel is doing. There's some confusion. Some confusion between the predicates for an armed career criminal statute, which is what this was, and the predicates for a career offender under the guidelines. And there was some confusion there. But the issue is being raised for the first time in the reply brief. It has no merit. It's waived because it's being raised for the first time. And the defendant argues that the district court judge was not sufficiently articulate. I submit that he was. He stated the reasons for the sentence. And one of the things he said is, I thought the incident occurred the way the government's witnesses said it occurred. Judge Moran said that he thought Officer Conley and the other government witnesses were telling the truth when they said that the defendant possessed a firearm and pointed it at Officer Conley at point-blank range. We think the sentence was appropriate, and we respectfully request the court to affirm.
It was a substantially below-guideline sentence, right?
It was below the sentencing guidelines, above the 15-year mandatory minimum.
62 months below.
62 months below. That is correct.
All right.
Thank you.
Mr. Hill, you have the gratitude of the court for your fine representation of your client in this matter. Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.